Speaking on this program is Franklin Kemp.
In the study of what Paul called the fruit of the Spirit. And the first thing that he mentioned was love. And in the lesson this morning, I tried to point out that I think this is the most difficult teaching of the Bible to apply to our lives. And if you followed me along in our discussion this morning, I believe at the close of our study, you would have agreed with me in view of what Jesus said about it in Matthew chapter 5. But in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus quoted a passage that the Jews, scribes and Pharisees, also quoted from the Old Testament. In verse 43, Jesus said, "You have heard it have been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy." That verse is taken from the 19th chapter of the book of Leviticus. It's interesting that when the scribe asked Christ, "What is the greatest commandment?" Jesus said, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy mind, all thy strength." And that passage is taken from Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 5. And then he added, "And thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." And that's taken from Leviticus 19:18. For a long time, this was sort of a puzzle to me. Why was it that the second commandment, to love thy neighbor as thyself, is found in the book of Leviticus? The book of Leviticus is that dry book that most people, when they begin to, in January the 1st, say, "I'm going to read the Bible through," they'll read Genesis and Exodus, and then they get to Leviticus. And then they wonder what all these ceremonies are about. And they get bogged down, and that's usually where they stop. Next year, on the first of the year, they say, "I'm going to read the Bible through," and they start Genesis, Exodus, and they get to Leviticus, and here we are again. But what about this book? Well, in the first place, if you understand the book of Hebrews, you'll have to know the book of Leviticus. But let me show you something about Leviticus 19:18. What's the book of Leviticus all about? In the first chapters of the book of Leviticus are listed five sacrifices that were necessary for one to approach God. The book of Exodus closes with the tabernacle being built, God's glory entering into the tabernacle, and thereby God in fellowship with the nation of Israel. So the book of Leviticus then was telling them how that fellowship with God was to be maintained. First of all, there were the sacrifices. Second, there is the law of the priesthood. So you have sacrifice and priesthood. Chapter 13, you have the law of the leper. And leprosy is a type of sin. In chapter 16, you have the great day of atonement, when there was to be the most solemn day in all Israel, and atonement was to be made for the nation of Israel. For their sin, the blood of bulls and goats could not take away sin, but only roll them forward. And therefore, every year in the nation of Israel, there was that great day of atonement. And then following the day of atonement, in chapter 17, you have the altar and the priest in relationship to the tabernacle. And then in chapter 18, there is a reminder that the nation was to be different from all the nations round about them. They were not to live like the people that lived in the land of Canaan. Now let's put all that together. Sacrifice, priesthood, the tabernacle and their fellowship with God meant that all of this was to impress upon them and lead them to live different from other people. They were not to live like the nation round about them. So sacrifice and priesthood and the altar and the tabernacle was a reminder that they were different from people that lived in the land of Canaan. Now then, it's in view of that that we come to chapter 19. And it's in chapter 19, in verse 18, that we find the statement that Jesus said that they were misquoting in Matthew chapter 5. In verse 18, Jesus said, "Thou shalt not avenge, nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." Now, I'd like for us to look at this chapter and like to show you that in this chapter, there is an illustration of what love does and how love acts. This will help us appreciate, I think, more of what Jesus said in Matthew 5 when he said, "Do good to them that mistreat you. Pray for them that despitefully use you." Here you have some examples of how one is to love as a neighbor. Now, briefly, let me just look at some things in this chapter and show you. Look at verse 9. "And when you reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly reap the corners of thy field, neither shalt thou gather the gleanings of thy harvest. Thou shalt not glean thy vineyard, neither shalt thou gather every grape of thy vineyard. Thou shalt leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God." And so we learn then that love is benevolent. Love cares and is concerned about the poor and the needy. And we can't love our neighbor, like Jesus said, and like God taught them, unless we're interested in and concerned about the poor. Do we place a definition on love then, like they did, and fail to see and appreciate that love is to show its care and concern for those who are in need? I'm afraid sometimes that we live in a world to ourselves, and we don't know too much about the fact that there are people in this world that hardly know how to live from one day to another. But after we married, for a while, I was working in a store, and at one time had a store on 15th Street in Anniston. One of the most unusual things that I ever saw in my life took place while I was working that store. There were some people, black people, that lived in that area, and some four or five different ones, their children would come to the store in the morning and buy something for breakfast. And they'd come back and they'd buy something for lunch. And they'd come back and they'd buy something at night. They never had anything beyond what they had just for that day. And I've often thought about that. What would it be like to live from day to day and to know that what I'll have to eat tomorrow will be all that I have? Do you get sort of disturbed a little bit when you begin to look in the refrigerator and you see your groceries getting a little bit low? You look in the pantry and you think, well, I think I need to go to the grocery store. Things are getting sort of low, and I need to sort of go and put some things in here. Now, you think about people that's living on the basis of just one meal at a time and from day to day. There are multitudes of people like that in the world, and some of them don't even have that much. And therefore, the importance of our understanding and being concerned and interested in the needs and of other people. But then look at verse 11. "Ye shall not steal." Love, then, has to do with the integrity of our business affairs. I think sometimes we get the idea that love is left behind when we leave the building. And when we get out into the business world, sometimes there are those who say, "But you can't operate a business based on love. There's too much competition. It won't work out. That's not the way it's done." That's not what this passage says. Because we're different and because we love, we work in our business affairs based upon that principle. And we're not to lay it aside. I learned a lesson a long time ago from my father about that. We had a store, and back during the Depression, times were hard. And there were some other stores in the same community that were in competition with us. One of them was having truly a difficult time. He had gotten to the place where times had become such that he didn't have any credit. And he'd have to pay cash for what stock he put in his store and sell that out and then buy more. And I remember on one occasion that one of the salesmen came by and was taking an order from us. And my father said, "What about?" He called the man's name, and he told him what the situation was. And he said, "I want you to take an order, and I want to pay for it." And he paid for the order for that man's store that week. Who is that? A competitor. Why do that? Because love works in business as it does everywhere else. And he was simply applying what this principle teaches here. That there is the integrity that's involved in business that must be controlled by love. And we don't just lay our business aside and forget about the principle of love. But then that's not all. In that same verse he said, "Neither lie one to another. Love keeps his word and his promises. One's word is his bond." And that's what that passage says. Love then controls our promises and the commitments that we make. We don't just make promises and then forget about them. Not if we are practicing the principle of love that's laid down in this chapter. Do we think about that? That's loving our neighbor. And Jesus said that the scribes and Pharisees had changed that, and they said, "You are to hate your enemy," but that's not what that said. But then again, we also ought to remember that this includes the relationship of preachers and elders. I've known elders that would promise a man that they'd support him as he went to a mission field. And he'd get halfway around the world. They decide they're going to build a building. And so they'd write him and say, "We're sorry, but in view of our needs, we're going to have to discontinue the support that we've given to you." I don't believe that's in keeping with what this passage says. I don't believe that would be right. To encourage someone to go to a foreign field and then allow a building or something else to come into place of continuing to do what you had promised to do. And that's the reason that I said that this passage has broad implication. But then again, look at verse 13. "Thou shalt not defraud thy neighbor, neither rob him. The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with thee all night until the morning." That means that as an employer, one must conduct his business in keeping with love. I knew a man one time that read this passage. And he had a young lady working for him. And he did what this passage said. He paid her wages every day. Well, I don't think it's necessary to do that. But I think it shows his interest and concern with what this passage said. And at the time that this was statement was made, there were those who lived from day to day. And if they did not receive their wage at the end of the day, they would not have anything for tomorrow. And that's the reason that this passage makes the statement that it does. But it tells us that as an employer, we are not just to conduct our business as an employer. Love is to share with the benefits that we get from our business. It's to be shared with others. And so again, you can see the importance of it. Then again, look at verse 14. "Thou shalt not curse the deaf, nor put a stumbling block before the blind, but shalt fear thy God, I am the Lord." That means that there is concern for the handicapped. That's what that's talking about. Had you ever thought about how long it's taken us in this country to try to do things for handicapped people? Have you ever wondered what it'd be like to be in a wheelchair and then to get out of a wheelchair and you try to go somewhere and you got steps to go up? What brought about building ramps so people in wheelchairs could go up? That's only doing what this passage says. You see parking places where it said, for the handicapped? What's that about? That's the realization that here are people that are handicapped, and it's not as easy for them to get out and walk a block, or two blocks, or three blocks, as it is for somebody else. Do you ever pull in a place for a handicapped person? And then perhaps a handicapped person drive and need that place to park? You can't get in it. I remember when I was in the exercise class at Brookwood Hospital, they had some places for handicapped people. And we had at least one or two in the class that were handicapped. And I know one lady told me that nearly every time that she came and she'd drive around to find that place for the parking of the handicapped, she said, somebody's in it. And it wasn't somebody's handicapped because it didn't have a sticker on it saying that they were handicapped. And so we need to learn to practice and realize that when you see that up there and it says handicapped, if you have to go two blocks to find the parking place, just remember what Leviticus 19 says in verse 14. That love cares for and is concerned about handicapped people. And thereby, even though I don't like to have to hunt up a parking place, I'll find me another parking place and leave that for the handicapped just like they intended when they put that sign up there. You see how practical love is and how close it gets down to where we live? Had you ever thought about when the Bible said, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, that it's saying don't park in the place of a handicapped person? Or that you're to build a ramp so handicapped people can get around a little better. But that's what that's telling us. And we need to remember that. But then again, dropping down to verse 15, notice. Ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. Thou shalt not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. But in righteousness thou shalt judge thy neighbor. Love does not mistreat people that are poor and then respect people that are rich or are mighty. Love does not discriminate between people because of what they have. Love recognizes the dignity of all people and tries to treat everybody alike. And it's not based then upon who you are, what your name, or what your standing in society may be, or how much you have. How do we react toward that? Do we make distinctions? James talked about showing respect of person based on this principle here. And he said you're not to do that. Something wrong. James said, if a rich man comes in, you bring him down to the front and say, come on down here and sit. But if a poor man comes in and you tell him to sit at the back, he said, something's wrong. Do the poor feel at home when they come where we are? They should, because of this principle. That we do not show respect of persons. Love is careful to be sure that it does not do that. You know, that's not an easy thing to do. Again, I say, when you remember that I said that love is one of the most difficult things that I know of to keep. But look again at verse 16. Thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people.
And so love then doesn't carry rumors. The Bible talks about a whisperer. Have you ever thought about the company that the Bible puts a whisperer with? Look in the first chapter of the book of Romans. And in the first chapter of the book of Romans, we have that long list of what happened to people whenever they turned their back upon God and refused to recognize God as God. And in describing some of the things that took place, Paul mentions in verse 29, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers. What's that? That's one that carries rumors. Talebearers. Not only that, look at the 2 Corinthians letter and notice what he says in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Look at verse 20. For I fear lest when I come I shall not find you such as I would, that I shall be found unto you such as ye would not, lest there be debates, envies, wrath, strife, backbitings, whisperings, swellings, tumults. Look at the company that whisperers, talebearers, associate with. It may be that I wouldn't want to be an adulterer or some of the other things said here, but what about carrying tales and rumors? Love is careful to try to guard the reputation of people. It has been said that our reputation is what people think we are, our character is what we really are. But reputation is important. People have had their reputations ruined by something told that was not true. It was false. And in all that was done to try to correct it and overcome it, it was never done. We ought to be real careful about what we say about other people and be sure that we realize that love does not cause us to say something that will simply be a rumor. But then again, look at verse 17. Thou shalt not hate thy brother in thine heart. Thou shalt in any wise rebuke thy neighbor and not suffer sin upon him. And so love is concerned with the wrongdoing of other people. You know, sometimes people do wrong and we don't say anything to them about it because we are afraid that we'll lose their friendship. This says that love regards trying to help somebody overcome sin in their life even more than it does friendship. Are there times when I have failed to say to somebody, that's wrong, and it needs to be corrected, lest in saying so I feel that I would offend them and lose their friendship? Love is concerned about wrong that's in our life. I'm not really a friend of a person if I overlook something that's going to cause them to lose their soul. It may be that I've done something that I do not realize it's a sin. And if so, I need somebody to tell me and to help me see that I've done wrong and then let love correct it. Finally, look at verse 18. Thou shalt not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And so love does not try to get even, strike back, bear grudge. No, that's not the way love does. And so it's no wonder then that when Jesus said, ye say, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy, Jesus said, no, that's not the way it is. Love doesn't do that. Love is not like that. And then it's found right in the midst of this chapter. Isn't it strange that the scribes and the Pharisees could read Leviticus 19:18 and then say, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy? When in the context of all of this, everything that is said would be the very opposite of that. There are two things in that that I need to try to learn. Number one, the importance of love and the difficulty of loving like the Bible teaches. Number two, the danger of interpreting passages to suit us. And the danger of misinterpreting passages because I want them to fit what I want to do. It's not easy to let the Bible say what it has to say and to be honest with it and examine our lives in the light of it and to build our lives upon it. That's the reason I said this morning that Paul said that the gospel of the grace of God is intended to remold and to remake our lives, and out of that comes the fruit of the Spirit, beginning with love. Is that in my life? Has the gospel produced that in me? We ought to think about it and consider it seriously. Because if love is not there, it's set forth in the Bible, then it means that the works of the flesh, back in verse 18, 19, are being produced in my life. I hope this study will help us and that we'll appreciate why the Bible says as much as it does about love. I think it's unfortunate that there are two extremes about love. One is the idea that love is some sentimental thing that overlooks sin and that has no bearing to what the Bible teaches about love. The other is that if one preaches on love, he's soft and he's not sound in the faith. How could that be? How could we have allowed ourselves to get to the place where we think that to teach on this great subject that has so much emphasis in the Bible is to indicate that we are unsound in the faith and there's something wrong with us? I'm afraid that this has had an impact in our lives, and it's had an impact in the church. And I'm afraid that it's led some of us not to think about love as seriously as we ought to, and not to open our lives and our hearts and our minds to the gospel of Christ so it could teach us and mold us to love as God loves. Not in one that Jesus said, "By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, that you have love one for another." We have been trying for a long time to convince the world that we are God's people. We say we speak where the Bible speaks and we're silent where the Bible is silent. We do Bible things in Bible ways. All of that's true. But you'll never find a passage anywhere in the Bible that says, "By this shall all men know that you're my disciple, that you do Bible things in Bible ways and call Bible things by Bible names." You'll never find that in the Bible, though the principle is correct. But it does say, "By this shall all men know that you're my disciples, that you have love one for another." Is this perhaps one of the reasons that we have failed to impress the world with the fact that we are indeed His disciples? If you'd like to become a Christian, loving the Lord because He loved you, and because you love Him, obey Him. I could have shown in that same 19th chapter of Leviticus that love is obedient to the truth. In the same passage, He said they were to reverence the Sabbath day, showing that they would respect God and His commandments and to keep them. And that's what love does. And so if you love Him tonight, you'll want to obey the gospel of Christ by believing and repenting and confessing your faith in Christ and being baptized. And if we have not loved as we ought to, then let us open our lives and our minds to the truth and let Jesus mold within our lives and motivate us to love as God loves.